certainly a pleasure to be able to speak to this group on this particular topic. And I think it's commendable that BIF chose this topic to spend some time on, particularly when you look at our other livestock industries, such as swine and poultry, the systems that they have in place to alter the genetics of feed efficiency, both in maternal and terminal lines of animals within their production systems. And so it is a very timely topic. I think it is time that we start thinking how to actually execute a plan to improve the genetics, not through just indirect responses or correlated responses. With that said, it's obviously very economically important, but we do have an entire profile of traits that impact profit. I'm going to talk a bit about really terminal systems, but throughout the entire production scheme. I am going to focus in primarily on the post-weaning phase, the terminal phase in steers, and so the things that I will be discussing will refer to that sector of production. In a great review of Economic Selection Index, Harris and Newman do point out that if we're going to implement Economic Selection Index, and I do think that is probably the most appropriate way for us to approach the utilization of selection for feed efficiency, is that we do have to account for it, the economics, the cost of feed consumption in some way, shape, or form, whether that be indirectly discounting growth for the cost of feed, because certainly growth does not come free, or having a genetic evaluation for some form of terminal efficiency, feed or forage consumption. I'm going to share with you the source of where this slide comes from here in just a few moments. This is a profile of traits for which we have involved Economic Selection Index in an Angus project I've been involved with for the last half dozen years or so. And we compute EPD for all of these traits that are listed on this slide. It's a terminal Angus system that's described in the Economic Selection Index. And so we compute EPD for birth weight, weaning weight, post-weaning gain, dry matter intake, and I'll share with you the details of that momentarily, marbling score, and birth weight, as well as yield grade. And if you cluster those, if you look at the relative selection emphasis in this particular scenario that those traits should receive to maximize profit, they cluster something like this, these being fairly equivalent and the most important, these still being important but not nearly to the degree of these traits above. Now, the interesting thing is that if you look at the component traits of feed conversion or feed efficiency, those being post-weaning gain and dry matter intake, they probably rise to the top collectively as having the most influence on profit. So it is important to the overall equation in a very significant way. I'm going to just talk about a handful of traits that describe terminal efficiency, and there are many others. We've heard about numerous of those here, but the literature that I'm going to share with you is going to mainly incorporate these. We can look at the component traits, that being dry matter intake and some form of weight gain over a period of time. Or putting those component traits together, probably the one that this group is most familiar with would be feed conversion, pounds of feed per units or units of feed per unit of gain, the value that we'd be most closely associated with on a feed yard closeout, something like that. Obviously, there a lower value is more desirable. Or its inverse, feed efficiency is most often termed in the literature. Another trait that we're going to hear, I think, a great deal more about in the next presentation, there have been a few references to it thus far, and we're going to look at it in this presentation, is residual or net feed intake. It's not a new trait, but probably to this group it's something relatively new in terms of how we're thinking about looking at feed efficiency. We'll describe that in just a moment. Feed conversion is the one that's most attractive to us probably to try and compute some sort of EPD for or put together some sort of genetic prediction for. However, it is a variable that is a bit problematic mathematically and one that we probably would rather not deal with in our computations, and just provide you a couple of illustrations as to why that is. These are three hypothetical sets of cattle, each with varying degrees of growth, a high, medium, and low at various average daily gains, and all with different dry matter intakes, but they all have the same feed conversion. This is probably not the set of cattle that you want to create time and time again, this low set. However, they have equivalent feed conversion as the other two. More specifically, when we look at the component traits and feed conversion, we're dealing with two biological variables that are expressed over time. And they probably do so at differing rates. And so you get into a lot of mathematical artifacts that you might not be selecting for what you wish to select for. And so it presents some problems within itself. As well as, I think has already been mentioned, is there are some genetic relationships with feed conversion that may not be too terribly desirable. What about this residual or net feed intake? We're going to take a detailed look at that here in a few moments. But it is a function, a bit of a prediction as well. Residual or net feed intake, you do have to have daily or dry matter intake records. You, from those records, through regression procedures, predict that, develop a set of prediction equations, and it's been most commonly done in most publications recently using average daily gain and some form of body weight. Again, getting at the energy requirements for growth and also maintenance. So you develop that set of predictions for your data set, whatever that data set is, and then you also have, so every animal has a predicted value, and he also has an actual record or an observed value. You deviate those two from each other, and so a value then that is more negative or lower would indicate that that animal is more efficient. That animal consumed less than the parameters for, say, gain and body weight predicted that that animal would have consumed. In other words, that animal was more efficient. Conversely, if that value is more positive, then that says that animal was less efficient. He consumed more than his level of growth and body weight said that he should have consumed. If we look at that graphically, I don't know that this helps clarify it very much, but maybe it does. This is from, we computed residual intake on a data set I'm going to share with you momentarily. Using average daily gain and a form of body weight, metabolic body weight, and for every level of average daily gain and body weight, you can see the relationship between that and intake. What this would say is that for every animal, given his whatever his level of gain and body weight is, he falls somewhere on that plane by the prediction. And so if his record falls below that plane, he would have a negative value or would have consumed less than the data or the population of data from which he came said he would have predicted. Now, by definition, when you predict residual or net feed intake or develop that trait, they then become phenotypically independent of the variables which you use to predict them. In this case, growth, average daily gain, and body weight. And so if you look in those same data that we're going to look at more closely, you see now that there's no at least phenotypic relationship between residual intake and average daily gain. Okay? There could be a genetic relationship, probably will not be, but there is no phenotypic relationship between the two. If we take a look at the historical literature in terms of the heritabilities that have been reported, I pulled these values from a review paper from Coots and others in 94, and that paper, actually a couple of papers, went through and summarized the genetic parameters for a whole number of traits. So I pulled out just a few of those, selected a few of those, and pulled out. We look at the heritability for feed conversion, feed efficiency, and feed intake. According to the historical literature, there certainly is genetic variation there that we can exploit to improve those particular traits at a fairly moderate level, if I might add. The genetic relationships from compiled again from the literature, just selected a few of those, and let's take a look at those. Genetic relationship between feed conversion and post-weaning gain is moderate and in a favorable direction. We heard comment yesterday in the question and answer session yesterday morning referring to that. And it's been a bit of the argument, I guess, is that, yes, we've been selecting for post-weaning gain. Probably we have pulled along with it feed efficiency as well and improved that. We can also make the argument that in doing that, we might have made the cow herd bigger as well. But it's a fairly moderate relationship in a favorable direction. Much smaller relationship reported across all of those studies that were in this review paper between feed conversion and fat thickness, indicating that genetically those more efficient cattle were also a bit fatter. Also interestingly, the genetic relationship between feed conversion and feed intake, roughly 0.4, indicating that genetically those cattle that were more efficient also consumed less as well. For feed intake, one of the component traits of feed conversion, a very moderate genetic relationship between weaning direct and post-weaning gain, both of those growth traits, indicating that genetically the cattle that grew faster or grew more consumed more, which I think we would all concede, and very small relationships between fat thickness and marbling score reported in those studies. Three more recent studies that I decided to put aside by themselves that have been published in the last couple of years that have involved this variable residual feed intake in them, and I thought it would be interesting to take a look at those. These are the heritabilities that were reported in these studies. This first one is in Angus bulls and heifers, Charolais bulls and Hereford bulls. And we look at the heritabilities are really in the same ballpark for these three traits as we saw in those parameters from the review. Fairly moderate with, I guess we get over into the exception of this Hereford study, these heritabilities for feed conversion and intake are a bit lower. But the heritabilities for residual feed intake in the Angus and Charolais studies were fairly equivalent around 0.4, and that again is fairly moderate, particularly when we put that in perspective to current parameters used in national cattle evaluation procedures like weaning weight. Weaning weight direct, I think most of the NCEs are somewhere in the 0.25 neighborhood in terms of the heritability that is used in that genetic evaluation. Some of the genetic correlations that from those same studies, they're fairly consistent with what was previously reported. The genetic relationship between feed intake and average daily gain in those studies, again, fairly moderate, indicating those cattle with more growth genetically also would consume more. The genetic relationship between feed conversion and average daily gain, again, moderate and in that same direction we saw before. And as well, between feed intake and feed conversion, indicating that those cattle that would be more efficient would also consume less. Now, we look at the genetic relationships reported with this newer variable residual feed intake, and we see a very, almost a negligible relationship between that and average daily gain. Now, remember that variation, that covariation between those two traits, that was removed at least phenotypically, and so you might expect that to be fairly close to zero, maybe somewhat independent of each other. The genetic relationship between residual feed intake and feed intake is really quite high, 0.7, 0.8, 0.64 reported in those studies, indicating that the cattle that had the lower residual or net feed intake, okay, the more desirable direction, that's in the more efficient direction, also consumed less. Okay? And that, again, is very moderate. The genetic correlations reported in those studies between residual feed intake and feed conversion, again, quite strong. And in the same direction, lower residual feed intake indicates more efficiency again, and so does, of course, lower feed conversion. And so those are in the same direction. Again, quite moderate. I want to talk about some feed intake data that we've been gathering in this in a progeny testing program, which I've been involved with for the last half dozen years. Describe to you the way in which we have used those feed intake data in economic selection index. And then what we'll have done for purposes of this presentation is pulled out our feed intake data, our carcass data, and growth data, and tried to estimate the heritabilities and genetic correlations among all these same traits in steers, for which we've already been talking about. This project is termed the Angus Sire Alliance. It basically is a design progeny testing program for a whole profile of economically important traits. It does have a marketing component to it that I won't go into the details of that. But roughly, breeders, Angus seed stock breeders, can nominate sires into the program. They get tested on commercial Angus cows. Genetic evaluations are run. That data is put together with economic selection index. Bulls are ranked and then marketed via one of the AI studs. These points on the map just represent Angus breeders that have nominated bulls into the program since it began. A quick overview of the program itself. It's operated by the commercial operations of Circle A Angus Ranches out of Missouri. They are also a seed stock producer as well. They have commercial operations in Stockton, Iberia, Huntsville, Missouri. That's where their three commercial cow-calf operations are. They have a commercial heifer development facility right up on the Iowa line at Lineville, Iowa, where post-weaning the heifers are shipped to that facility, developed, bred, and then shipped back to their respective ranches. In this particular program, to generate these data, when a sire is nominated, he is also provided via Natural Service. And so he goes to one of the ranches for Natural Service. He's used AI at the other two ranches. There's Natural Service, of course, at all three ranches. The bulls that are not being used Natural Service at one ranch, they're used AI at another. So what results in that particular scenario is that we have a nice situation with respect to the contemporary groups and how these sires are distributed across them. We have also used some of the same bulls year after year, and so the contemporary groups within a ranch and across years are really connected quite nicely in the data set. A lot of information, a lot of data gets generated in this particular project, and they simply have decided to do that. They have a centralized database that each of the managers utilize every day, where all of those data go into one source to manage their particular operations. They do calve in the fall and the spring, and so from these data now, we do compute two within-herd genetic evaluations each year because of that, as new data come in from growth data as well as carcass data. When I run that genetic evaluation, I just run one overall six-trait model that incorporates birth weight, weaning direct and maternal, post-weaning gain, dry matter intake, yield grade, and marbling score. Every steer, heifer, cow, bull, every animal in the pedigree gets an EPD and an accuracy along with that. Again, it's one single multivariate model utilizing the genetic relationships that the literature says are present among all of those traits to help enhance the accuracy of prediction. Once I generate those EPDs, we then go and apply economic selection index to those EPDs. These happen to be the weights that we have generated for each of these traits, and what you see is that the units all cancel out, and every animal in the evaluation gets a profit value, an economic index value that's in monetary units. Again, let me reemphasize, this is for a terminal production system in terms of how the selection index is put together. Does not emphasize the maternal component at all at this particular point. And it also is for a defined system of production using commercial Angus females. how we've gone about generating the relative economic values as I've worked with Mike McNeil at the USDA station in Miles City. Mike has spent a great deal of his time in research efforts in economic selection index. And so we have used a modified version of software that he's been working with for a number of years for this particular purpose, where basically we can go in and simulate the production scenario that we're dealing with, the cost and revenues that are associated therein, and the biology that we're seeing in the system, and get at those economic values that we use in the economic selection index. After the first year we started this project, we were really struggling with what were we missing in the overall scenario. At that point, we had not incorporated intake into the equation. And we felt a couple of ways to do that. We could just simply go in and discount growth across the board for the cost of intake and maybe come up with another genetic evaluation. And we would have no intake observation, but we would just use the genetic relationships that the literature says exist and compute maybe an ERT for that. We felt like, however, we needed to explore that a bit further because we felt like we were seeing genetic differences there, but we just certainly weren't sure. So the ranch made the commitment to take one of their facilities and put in a set of kaolin gates at the time. And so this facility has 96 kaolin gates. And that allows us to get daily dry matter intake. This happens to be at their Huntsville commercial operation. It is indoors, has some outside runs, really a nice facility. But what we do is, what I do is go in and pull out whole contemporary groups, all right, and place those whole contemporary groups into the facility. And so those contemporary groups have not been disturbed, sorted, selected, if you will, in any way, so we, as best possible, can get an unbiased sample, if you will. Remember I said that we're utilizing a multivariate genetic model, so we not only have the intake records, and that's having an influence on a SIRE EPD for intake, but we're also using the genetic relationships that have been reported in the literature, for example, with average daily gain. And so all that information is being weighted in the system in some way, shape, or form so that every animal, regardless of whether or not it has records, is getting an intake EPD. This is just an illustration of a steer that one of the steers in the test has his own individual bunk area. And if you're familiar with kaolin gates, he and he only can come into this system. It is weighed out and vacuumed back out on a daily basis, so we know how much he's consuming throughout the feeding period. The rest of his 900 or 1,000 cohorts have gone on feed in a commercial feed yard where they are being developed, again, in a whole contemporary group sort of situation before we harvest the steers and gather the actual carcass data at that point. Just finished the most recent genetic evaluation from that a couple of weeks ago, and what I've done here is gone in and pulled out the sires from that genetic evaluation that have, from the within herd genetic evaluation, have a birth weight EPD accuracy of at least 0.55. In this data set, and the way I compute the accuracies, that's roughly 35 to 40 progeny birth weight records, somewhere in that ballpark. This represents the range in EPD of those 156 sires. So you can see there's some genetic differences present for all of these particular traits. Birth weight, weaning weight, a 47-pound range. This is post-weaning average daily gain, pounds per day. Roughly a 1.5 pound per day difference among the sires in their EPD. Okay, that's pounds per day, and that's really quite significant, I might add. And quite a bit of variance in marbling score, half a yield grade difference in that EPD as well. And then an overall difference in their profit index of around $37, and that's profit per progeny produced among those 156 sires. Interestingly enough, I did mention we generate EPDs on steers, and I'd never really thought a whole lot about this before this project, but it's quite interesting to see some of the EPD profiles we get on some of these cattle that we're slaughtering. And in terms of, we wish we had the opportunity to go and and not castrate them and capture them to put them back into the herd for selection purposes. What I've done on this slide is those 156 sires, I've pulled the top four indexing sires for this terminal system and the bottom four indexing sires. Rescaled the lowest sire to an index value of zero, and the highest is now $37.50 roughly. And then for each of these traits involved in the index, this is where that sire's EPD ranked him among the 156 bulls. So it's not his EPD, but where he ranked in the appropriate direction for lower birth weight, higher weaning weight, higher post-weaning gain, higher marbling, lower yield grade, and lower dry matter intake. And so what you see here is the where these sires rank in terms of those bulls that are most profitable and those that were the least profitable among those 156. And it's generally not the bull that is number one in any one particular trait, but does a number of things, of course, real well. And this first sire, for example, he's worse than average in this group of 156 for birth weight, but he is in the very top end for weaning weight, top one-third roughly for post-weaning gain, about the same for marbling. Really, in this set of data, has very good yield grade and very good consumption genetics. And so all of those things, when appropriately weighted, make him surface to the top. Well, we have started to see now that we have as many sires as we do involved in the data set, is we're starting to see some differing genetic profiles come to the top. And if you look at this third bull, for example, he's a bit different than the top two sires. He has excellent birth weight genetics, just really, in fact, a little below average for weaning weight, better than that for post-weaning gain. He is the best marbling score sire we have ever evaluated, actually by quite a large degree, and has very acceptable yield grade genetics along with that and fairly good consumption genetics. And so that differing kind of profile, when appropriately weighted, has made him surface to the top. And so we're starting to see some somewhat differing genetic profiles come to the top. And I believe someone had a question or a point yesterday about that, that because we are weighting these traits, it does allow for that to happen. And what kind of effect does that have on the variance of the system? That was an interesting point. Conversely, these bottom bulls, for the most part, they really, within that set of bulls, didn't do anything very well, with the exception of, here we have the 155th sire. He has very good consumption EPD, very good dry matter intake EPD, but what offsets that is, of this set of bulls, he's down near the bottom with respect to growth. And so all those things have been taken into account. Now, the other thing that I did, just as an exercise in these data, is I pulled out the two component traits of feed conversion and applied their economic weights. And I'm not sure if that's quite the right thing to do or not, but I thought it would just give us a snapshot of the variation that's there of those traits that are controlling feed efficiency. And when you look at those two traits by themselves, there's roughly a $14 difference per offspring produced difference among these sires. And I think that's quite sizable. Now, what I've done at this point is to try and take a look at the genetic relationships and the parameters that are in this set of data for this particular presentation. We have estimated those, and I'm going to share those with you in the next slide. What I did in that analysis is I just simply pulled only the steer data out. Okay? And so what you can see on this slide is we have roughly 4,000 steer records that we have production information on, as well as carcass data on. And we do have on 353 of those steers daily intake records. Okay? And it's a small data set, and I was very hesitant to do this, and I would not have shared the results of this with you if they didn't look really quite reasonable, but I've decided to go ahead and do that. We are continuing to collect these data, and so this intake data set is going to grow over time as well. And we're doing that right now at 2 revolutions per year within the intake facility. But you can look at some of the averages that exist in this particular data set and with respect to any of these traits you're interested in. Average daily dry matter intake of roughly 20 pounds per day. Dry matter feed conversion of a little better than 5.5. You see residual intake, the average for that is 0. Okay? And that's just as a result of the statistics used in this particular process. And then you can see the averages of the carcass traits for which we collect. We do collect actual steer carcass data on every animal that goes through this program. We have scanned most all of those as well. Going through a variance component estimation procedure on these data as represented in the previous slide. Again, this would be Angus steer data. These are the heritabilities that we've estimated on the diagonal and the genetic relationships among these traits on the off diagonal. The heritabilities appear to be pretty much in line with what we have seen in the literature. Residual intake is fairly similar to what we saw in at least two of those three studies that we reported earlier. So there does appear to be genetic variation to be exploited here in this data set with respect to feed efficiency. If we look at some of the genetic relationships on this slide, hopefully you can see these numbers in the back of the room. Very consistent relationships among most of these traits, what we saw in the literature reported, that being a very moderate relationship between dry matter intake and average daily gain in the same direction we saw earlier. Really, the only troubling thing that I saw in this analysis is the relationship that we estimated with feed conversion and average daily gain, that being almost negligible, and I don't believe that. The estimates that have been reported show that to be quite moderate, and I think most people here believe that. With that said, we computed average daily gain a bit differently. Here we did not have final live weights going out of the feed yard, and so we just back estimated those based on the carcass weight. We do have some mid weights on those cattle in the feed yard, so maybe we want to take a look at that and see if that relationship changes. The other thing I need to point out here is that we have this trait on those 4,000 steers, and we have the intake records the intake records on only 353. And so there's a bit of a disparagement there in terms of the numbers that do exist. However, the relationship between feed conversion and intake, again, being moderate and in the same direction we saw earlier, being that those more efficient cattle, if you define that as feed conversion, had lower intakes. If you look at the relationships in these data between residual intake and these traits, we find a small genetic relationship between residual intake and gain, a bit larger than what we saw in those previous studies, and a very high genetic relationship between residual intake and intake. Those previous studies reported, I believe, 0.7, 0.8, and roughly 0.65. This is a bit higher in intake data, and I think, David, you had mentioned that you're seeing a little bit higher genetic relationship in your steer data, maybe, where those were bulls for the most part. The correlation between feed conversion and residual intake, also moderate and very similar to what was reported in those other studies. Now, one thing I want to add here, I didn't have a slide on this on two of the studies that reported it, is the genetic relationships they were reporting between residual intake and fat thickness, or some measure of composition. What we have found in this is there is a moderate genetic relationship that those more efficient cattle are also leaner. I didn't show the numbers from those other two studies, but there was a small relationship reported in the study with Angus bulls and heifers, and a much larger relationship reported with that in Hereford bulls, all in that same direction. And so maybe that indicates that those more efficient cattle, if we're describing them with residual feed intake, that is a gain that is really made up more of lean than of fat. Marbling, that relationship is a bit smaller, but again in the same direction, indicating that those cattle that were more efficient didn't have quite as much marbling as well. I just want to close the next couple of minutes and maybe just briefly talk about the options, at least, that we see that might be available to put a plan into execution for the industry. The research, that's all nice and good, but how do we move forward from here in terms of doing this maybe on a much broader scale? And I think we've at least on this slide maybe encompassed the two major avenues that do exist. We've already heard a bit really about most of these. The first would be predicting some new phenotype of intake or some sort of intake trait using whatever procedures, maybe the one we heard about yesterday morning, or there are a number of others available that we can use other phenotypes that are expressed to predict some form of intake. The other option would be to compute an EPD for intake. The trait would not be in the data set as a record, but it's just based purely on the genetic relationships that exist with the other traits. Maybe that incorporates gain, maybe it incorporates fat, whatever other traits might be genetic related. This is a very appealing approach because it's easier to implement than the next one, okay? And you have something much more immediately. And I think that you could make, at least if you practice single trait selection, would make genetic trend using this first approach. The disadvantage of that is that the animals that we may be really the most interested in may lie in the error. They may be the ones that we're missing, whether it be through the prediction of the phenotypes. They're going to be the ones that defy. They're not going to follow the norm. Or they're going to be the ones that defy the genetic correlations. Maybe think about it this way. We could compute, say, a birth weight EPD only using weaning weight records, because we know there's a moderate genetic relationship that exists between those two traits, and we could use that, never collect the birth weight, compute that EPD, and make selection progress based on that. But you would have never have identified as an industry the bulls that you have today that have defied that norm, that now we see more and more of, that maybe have combinations of calving ease and growth that we wouldn't have found otherwise without gathering both of those kinds of data. The second option is through direct measurement, a bit like maybe what we've done in this project that I've just described. Certainly with that approach now, we have the record. We can blup that in either way, residual intake, dry matter intake, however we choose to compute that. The obvious problem with that is the cost associated with it. Who's going to do it? How's it going to be structured? Because that is a significant hurdle, and we've already heard reference to that. With that said, it is being done. We're going to hear in the next presentation, one of the following presentations, how it's being done, how it's been implemented in that industry and being utilized. It's the more appealing, but to make this happen, we're going to have to figure out ways to fund this type of infrastructure to support whether it be USDA stations, land grants, whatever the scenario might be, to get at those type of records. So it is doable. Maybe there's a combination of the two that we could use in some way. But I don't think we ought to blow off the second option just because we say it's too difficult to get at. I have a good friend and colleague that heads up the nucleus genetics programs for the largest swine company in the world. They gather these data on every animal that goes through the nucleus operation, individual intake records. And so, because they realize the value in it, which does raise an important point, is that if we invest in gathering these kinds of data, you want to be assured that you're going to reap the economic benefit of the cost of investing in that new breeding program. In an integrated industry, you can do that. It's a little bit more difficult, obviously, for us to recapture that investment and the economic payoff of doing that, because we don't always own those cattle in the post-weaning phase, and we lose that efficiency in the overall production scheme. With all that said, with respect to the industry, we just did some very gross calculations based on the number of cattle that are fed in the U.S. Using, I think, an average feed conversion of around $6.50 per ton dry matter on feed. And if we could improve feed consumption, reduce it by 2%, and hold everything else constant, not mess around with any of the other traits, improve or reduce their impact, that we would improve net return by roughly $120 million to the industry. And so I don't think it's a trait that we should ignore, but we do have some hurdles to overcome and figure out how to make it happen. Thank you very much.